From WBUR in Boston, it's Weekly Warm-Up, a sampling of the cornucopia of stories and interviews featured on Only a Game, sports public radio style.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available voice-activated navigation. More at acura.com/RDX.
Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
This is Only a Game. I'm Karen Given. Bill Littlefield is off this week. After a regular season, the league, players, and fans might want to forget the NBA playoffs begin today. Here to bring us beyond discussions of tanking, brawls, and suspensions and into the magical world of the playoffs is Boston Globe columnist and longtime NBA observer Bob Ryan. Bob, welcome back to Only a Game.
Thank you, Karen.
Let's start with Western Conference matchups. Golden State, which had missed the playoffs each season since 1994, will take on the league's best regular season team, the Dallas Mavericks, which had won 67 and lost only 15 games. But some suggest that the matchup may not be so lopsided. Why?
Because the Warriors actually won the season series 3-9, which has mystified one and all. I think most people put no stock in that whatsoever. It's just one of those quirky things. I don't think anyone seriously thinks the Warriors have any hope of winning more than one game in that series when they start playing for real.
You are very much disappointing my colleague.
Sorry. I'm happy that the Warriors have made it. I'm an old friend and admirer of Don Nelson, who has perked up the franchise and given them new life, and they made a wonderful trade in the middle of the year that helped them, and this is their reward. This is like being nominated for the Oscar when you know that Nicholson's going to walk off with the prize. your reward, your Oscar is your nomination. Their Oscar is getting in.
The Phoenix Suns won 61 games this season, 19 more than their first-round opponent, the Los Angeles Lakers. This would also be a mismatch, but Kobe Bryant's always capable of scoring 50 points a game, right?
That is correct, and he will probably come up with one, and they will win that game, and that will be the only one they will win. Phoenix is ready to go. I believe they're reasonably healthy. They should have minimal trouble beating the Lakers, but it will be an entertaining thing because Kobe is the league's MEP, most entertaining player.
Houston and Utah would appear to be an intriguing matchup, not just because of their nearly identical records, but also because their styles of play more closely resemble that of most Eastern Conference teams. Maybe Commissioner Stern should move those teams to the East next year.
They are rather quintessential Eastern kind of teams, although I must say that Utah, which has traditionally been a very stick-in-the-mud conservative walk-up team, has the most devastating offense that they've had probably in the whole time that Jerry Sloan has been coaching the team, which has been since 1989. This is an intriguing matchup. There are those who like this as much as any in basketball and would like to see it because there's a case to be made for each of these teams upsetting people on right to the finals. This is a knockdown dragout. I can see this going no fewer than the limit. I'm going to pick Utah, but I think this is going to be a terrific series.
Well, speaking of the East, Miami and Chicago, which many pundits thought would be the number one and number two seeds at the start of the season, are instead seeded number four and number five and face each other in the first round. Can we just consider this series to be the conference finals?
Chicago finds himself in this predicament because they lost the last game of the season. Mm-hmm. Had they won it, they would have been second and would be playing Washington. This is a very, very regrettable thing they have done, losing that final game. Miami is healthy and ready to go. Healthier. I don't know if Dwayne Wade will, how long it will take him to get back to his pre-injury condition, but the interesting thing that's happened this year, two things have happened with this team on the court. Shaq is playing better earlier than usual. He played very well in the last month, and usually he saves himself of late until the spring. And secondly, Jason Capono, the itinerant jump shooter from UCLA, has found a home and has had a tremendous year, gives them a new threat from the outside. I think they will prevail in that series.
The Washington Wizards, which at one time sat atop the East, lost its two best players to injuries and must now face the Cleveland LeBrons without Gilbert Arenas and Caron Butler. Should Washington just forfeit this series?
Well, the fans should mentally forfeit it and then accept any little goody they get, like maybe like a halftime lead. This has all the makings of a sweep. And it's too bad. The Washington was one of the more intriguing teams, certainly in the East, before the injury struck. I would say that it would almost go to the point of saying that it's too bad that they couldn't just cede their spot in the playoffs to someone else. For example, Philadelphia, who really played well after they traded Allen Iverson, and probably would give Cleveland a better fight right now than Washington will.
Bob, I'm looking at the other two first-round matchups, Detroit-Orlando and San Antonio-Denver, and I'm having a hard time finding anything interesting about them.
I must say that you didn't look hard enough in the West. Denver has come on. It took a while. Once, you know, when Allen Iverson arrived there, Carmelo Anthony was serving his suspension in the aftermath of the big brawl in New York in December, and it took a great deal of time before they began to mesh, but they have. They came on very strong. There are people who think that they're a sleeper team in the West to cause some damage. I don't think they're going to beat San Antonio, but I think they're going to make San Antonio work for it. But I would keep my eye on that series. Right, the other series is of surpassing no interest whatsoever to anybody outside the two cities involved. Detroit will roll over Orlando. If Orlando wins a game, I'd say stop the presses.
Veteran NBA referee Joey Crawford, who allegedly challenged San Antonio forward Tim Duncan to a fight during a game last Sunday, was suspended for the remainder of the season. It's quite unusual for the league to punish officials. What other factors are going on here?
Well, according to the commissioner, Joey is not a first-time offender. Principal Stern has called young master Crawford into the office on more than one occasion, we learn. And obviously, whatever instructions he gave him as to how to handle himself, young Mr. Crawford did not heed. One thing that all the great referees in my experience have shared is an outsized personality and an autocratic nature, and Joey is in that mold. He's come to a point where he feels the games are his games to run in his manner. He's been in the league 31 years. He's clashing with a commissioner who has evolved to the point where he takes everything in this league personally, in my opinion. Everything is about David framing it and how I want to see things, how I want to see things done. But I think the key phrase that the commissioner used was lack of control. Joey exhibited a lack of control in that instance.
Bob, you're an entertaining guy, so please entertain our listeners with entertaining playoff picks for entertainment purposes only.
Entertainment playoff picks. I believe that San Antonio is a very good pick to win this whole thing. Though Dallas had the 67 games, I want to see how they do in the playoffs against a motivated San Antonio team. San Antonio-Phoenix is going to be a tremendous series eventually. I root for Phoenix, but the pragmatist in me says that San Antonio's defense and their combination of defense and explosiveness with people such as Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker augmenting the ever-stoic, ever-reliable Tim Duncan and the great coaching of Greg Popovich, I see them defeating Detroit in a, frankly, not a memorable final.
Bob Ryan is a columnist for the Boston Globe and joins us from time to time to talk pro hoops. Thanks again, Bob.
Welcome, Karen.
If you noticed Atlanta Braves fans seemed restless, unsettled, and bored last October, there was good reason for that. After winning 14 straight division titles, the Braves missed the 2006 playoffs. But as Ron Schachter reports, the team's off-season moves have fans confident that henceforth, Atlanta will not be idle come autumn.
The Atlanta Braves may have received more attention for missing the playoffs last year than for making 14 straight trips to the postseason. But if you think their star is in decline, third baseman Chipper Jones begs to differ.
We got too many good players. We've addressed the one glaring need that we had. We won 79 games last year and we blew 29 saves. So if we convert half of those, we win as many games as any division title winner last year.
The Braves have traded recently for closer Bob Wickman and top-notch setup men Rafael Soriano and Mike Gonzalez. Bobby Cox, now in his 22nd season as Atlanta's manager, says those deals should make a big difference.
The name of the game has always been pitching, and we were a little short last year, so getting Soriano, Gonzalez, and getting Wick signed up made us darn strong out there, and I think we'll still score as many runs, so... You know, the team itself was good last year. We had one soft spot, and we fixed it, and we think we'll contend again.
And so far, the Braves are back to their winning ways. They sped to a 7-1 record to start the season, and since then have jockeyed with the New York Mets, last year's division champs, for first place in the NL East. But if this year's fix seems quick and easy, Atlanta's long-term success is another story. General Manager John Schuerholz is in his 17th season with the Braves.
It's been one of my operating principles since I've been a general manager, now 26 years. Keep the pipeline of talent filled. And that demands that you have outstanding scouting program and as well a development program that complements that scouting program. Find the raw material and put it in the hands of talented craftsmen and artisans to polish it off and finish it. Put it in the pipeline. Have it matriculate to the major leagues, available to you, for you to use to help make your major league club better by their own abilities or have them available to trade to another organization that has the exact piece you need to get back.
That pipeline has produced three generations of homegrown Braves, from prize pitchers John Smoltz and Tom Glavin to superstars Chipper and Andrew Jones to young all-star catcher Brian McCann and right fielder Jeff Francoeur, who hit 29 homers and knocked in 103 runs last year. 2 years ago, the Braves won the NL East title with 18 rookies. Chipper Jones, who has a lifetime batting average above 300 and more than 360 career home runs, says that the new generation arrived ready to contribute and familiar with the Braves' way.
Well, I think the Braves are really good at making sure that young kids are truly ready to play in the big leagues before they get here. There's a certain type of player that you have to be to play here. Not only do we bring in good players, we bring in good people, we bring in good teammates, people who have their own agenda, usually don't stay here very long. And there's a tremendous amount of pride and camaraderie that goes along with donning this uniform.
While other elite teams like the Yankees, Red Sox, and Mets have splurged on free agents, the Braves have cut their payroll over the past 2 years from $100 million to $80 million. Their abundance of lower-priced young players has also allowed them to trade for key veterans, including starting pitcher Tim Hudson and shortstop Edgar Renteria. Starter John Smoltz has been here since 1988 and has won 195 games and saved another 154 during a four-year stint as the team's closer. He admires the Braves' versatility.
The one thing that we've done here is with different types of teams we've won. It hasn't been like a group that stayed together forever. We won with speed, we won with defense, we won with pitching, we won with power.
For all the Braves' keys to success, though, the team has labored under a reputation as an also-ran in the postseason. That view rankles veterans like Smoltz.
Say what you will, people can try to take apart what we haven't done versus what we have done and look at it as somewhat of a failure, and we don't look at it that way. We look at it as 14 straight years we had a chance to do something special. Unfortunately, we only had one World Series out of it, but I like the chances of knowing every year that you got a chance to win it versus maybe winning it 1 year and disappearing for 5 years.
For now, the Braves are focused on winning their 15th division title in 16 years and getting back to the World Series. But, adds Chipper Jones, they also won't forget their unparalleled run of athletic success.
I don't think it'll really truly be appreciated until this generation is done playing, to be honest with you. I think it'll be 15, 20 years down the road before people look back and say, wow, that really was a tremendous, tremendous feat.
For Only a Game, I'm Ron Schachter.
Berlin, New Hampshire calls itself the city that trees built, but the paper industry has been dying in Berlin for decades, and last spring, with the closing of two more paper mills, local industry has essentially disappeared. Today, unemployment has soared to 7%, almost double the statewide rate. But officials and locals believe a massive 7,200-acre state park might revitalize the city. The park, which opened last August, has been set aside for dirt-spraying, off-roading, all-terrain vehicles. Can ATVs save Berlin? Keith O'Brien has the story.
On the shores of Jericho Lake, a few miles north of downtown Berlin, it is quiet but for the sound of wind and water. Bob Danderson, the mayor of Berlin, likes this sort of peace and quiet as much as anyone in the North Country. But what he'd really like to hear at Jericho Mountain State Park is some noise. Danderson, silver-haired and blue-eyed, revs up the engine on his brand-new Fire Engine Red two-man ATV. It's freezing outside, but Danderson, known to Berlin's 10,000 residents as simply Mayor Bob, is excited to be at the park. This is his baby, his idea. He first mentioned it to a state official in 2005.
He looked at me like I had two heads. He says, no one else wants them.
But Berlin did. In late 2005, the state approved a plan to buy the land from a logging company for $2.1 million. And since the park opened late last summer, Danderson has been out here all the time. He hits the gas, and together we tear off down a narrow, bumpy trail into the naked woods.
So how fast can you get this thing going, Bob?
Well, top speed on it's about 50 miles an hour.
50, 5-0?
50, yep.
Have you ever gone that fast?
On a logging road. The logging roads out here are like highways.
Jericho Mountain currently has just 18 miles of trail, which isn't much considering that an enthusiastic ATV rider can easily go 40 miles in a day. But there are plans to build more. The master plan, completed last December, calls for 136 miles of trails, as well as 200 campsites, a boat ramp, public restrooms, and a general store. It's a plan that has some people, including environmentalists, worried. But locals, tired of losing jobs, paper mills, and workers, are excited about what's happening in the woods on the edge of town. Dick Hewat, president of the Androscoggin Valley ATV Club, believes the park will do the unthinkable, turn Berlin into a tourist destination.
We've had a lot of people that had to leave. Our high school graduates, there's an exodus. Every year, there's an exodus of high school graduates that leave. They go get educated, and there's no real job for them to come back to, so they stay away. But I know that a lot of those people would love to come back if they had an opportunity to come back too. So we're hoping, I am hoping, that this is part of that opportunity that'll get the people to come back.
It's not the craziest idea ever conceived, even here in remote Berlin, 180 miles north of Boston, nestled in the mountains, a short drive from the main border. In fact, building ATV parks to generate buzz has been done before in rural America, and done well. Just ask Jeffrey Lusk.
I think they can transform the economy of a rural area.
Lusk would know. He is executive director of the Hatfield-McCoy Regional Recreation Authority, an agency created by the West Virginia legislature to oversee 578 miles of ATV trails in five poor rural counties. The trails first opened in October 2000, and the initial impact was marginal. Less than 4,000 permits were sold the first year. But last year, Hatfield-McCoy sold more than 26,000 permits. One recent study estimated the trails have generated $7.7 million in direct spending, while also creating about 150 local jobs.
An even better look at this would be that we have 53 lodging providers that did not exist in October of 2000. 53 new companies that have opened up who provide lodging to trail riders. You know, that's the biggest impact. What we have saw is the trail system has just created opportunities for entrepreneurs. You know, we have brought a new economic base into this area, and that new economic base creates opportunities for entrepreneurs.
Down on Main Street in Berlin, Scott Gregory, the owner of T-Bird's Cafe, likes the sound of that.
Dollars and cents ringing in Berlin, New Hampshire.
His cafe is about 500 feet west of the old pulp mill, now shuttered and being dismantled. And while this brought him customers when the mill was open, it also brought an unwelcome guest.
The smell of the pulp mill was somewhere around burnt cabbage to rotten eggs on a bad day. Most days you didn't smell it, but the ones you did made up for the ones you didn't. And it was pretty bad, and it had its really bad moments.
Now this smell, which locals say once impregnated their clothes, their cars, their businesses, is gone. And the 800 jobs from this and a second mill are gone too. But thanks to the Jericho Mountain ATV Park, there is hope in Berlin. And to some, it looks like Randy Cicchetto.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Cicchetto moved here from Rochester, New Hampshire last summer and opened the first new ATV-related business, Jericho Motorsports. Located just outside the park, it's a place where people can rent ATVs and curl up in front of Cicchetto's fireplace with a mug of warm cocoa when they're done. It is, for Cicchetto, a dream come true.
The snowmobile industry has probably reached its peak, but the ATV industry is growing leaps and bounds because, let's face it, there's not as much snow as there used to be. Either that or we're getting taller. For the ATV industry, the expansion is coming.
This is what troubles Andrew Walters. As founder of ATV Watch, a New Hampshire group dedicated to protecting the environment from ATVs, he wishes the people of Berlin all the best. And in fact, he did not oppose the park when it was first being developed.
We never took a position because we didn't know whether it was going to be the answer to our problems or whether it was going to be the start of bigger problems. We were hopeful that perhaps Jericho Mountain State Park would allow ATV trails to be removed from other more sensitive state lands, and that we could have an isolated ATV park, and that perhaps was a good compromise.
Has that proven to be the case?
No.
Walter says he's worried that the park has been opened without proper regard for the environment, and the state still plans to open more ATV trails elsewhere. According to the park's master plan, the goal is to open 350 miles of trails statewide in the next 5 years, the equivalent of almost three Jericho Mountains. More trails could lead to more ATV sales, Walter says, and more ATVs could lead to an increased demand for still more trails. And in the years ahead, that can make this sound more common. It's hours after we first set out on the back of Mayor Bob Danerson's red ATV, and here he is, still sloshing through a muddy, half-frozen mess. He is giddy out here in the wilderness, but on this day, what he finds waiting for him back at the parking lot makes him even happier. It's a tourist driving a car with Massachusetts license plates.
Look at that.
Drive up one and drive down the other.
Isn't that what this is all about?
Oh, yeah.
See the tags? Massachusetts tags. We love them.
For Only a Game, I'm Keith O'Brien in Berlin, New Hampshire.
Here now to discuss the week's news is the gentleman we refer to as the real sports guy, Charlie Pierce. The Penguins are out of the Stanley Cup playoffs. They were eliminated on Thursday. Too bad, because it would seem the NHL needs for people to see more of Sidney Crosby, don't you think?
Can't they make Sidney a senator for another couple of weeks? I mean, they could do almost anything. No one's noticing. They could
Why
have
not?
Him play for every team like Pele did that 1 year. Yeah, they were not a factor. They lost in five pretty easy games. They got shut out in game five by Ray Emery, who, an unremarkable goaltender on his best day. Sidney's first pro season ends with him probably doing television, I would think, the rest of the way.
The New York Rangers swept the Atlanta Thrashers in the first round, marking the first time the Rangers have made it to the second round in a decade. Team captain Jaromir Jagr said, quote, "As long as we stay healthy, we have a pretty good chance to go somewhere." Where might that somewhere be?
Probably, I would think, the next round. Boy, I would like to thank the. We have some lovely parting gifts for the Atlanta Thrashers, who were barely in the, who barely made the playoffs and then barely showed any presence at all while they were there. It is good, and I hate to sound like a marketing guy, but it is good for the NHL to have the New York teams still alive.
Well, help me out here, Charlie. Last season, Alex Rodriguez was a self-centered jerk who hit to pad his own stats and didn't hit in the clutch. Now he's the greatest guy in the world, at least according to Yankees fans. What's going on?
Well, we like fans. We have, you know, we like fans. Fans are our bread and butter. This program even has several. But many of them are jackasses. Alex Rodriguez, I guarantee you that if Alex Rodriguez continues on and hits, he's on a pace to hit like 90 home runs now. If he hits 90 home runs and then hits 240 in the first round of the playoffs, he's a bum again. Fans are jackasses.
Less than 3 weeks into the season, Major League Baseball already has its first no-hitter. Chicago White Sox pitcher Mark Burley was only one walk away from a perfect game against the Texas Rangers. Not bad for a guy who doesn't have a contract for next season.
Oh, but they haven't gotten the marching band out of his agent's office yet. This was terrific. A very efficient, a two-hour game. He faced the minimum batters. He walked Sammy Sosa, who then brilliantly got picked off first base. So he faced the 27 batters that you face. A marvel of efficiency, and oddly enough, the 16th no-hitter in the history of the White Sox. The second most no-hitters in the history of one franchise in baseball, the leader being the Los Angeles Dodgers, which is sort of unfair because Sandy Koufax counts there.
Though it's not a sports story, I'm compelled to bring up the Virginia Tech massacre, Charlie. This week, VT alum Michael Vick donated $10,000 to assist victims' families. The Washington Nationals wore VT caps to show their support. Those efforts are laudable, but I'm left wondering, what, if anything, can sports stars really do to help in situations like this?
Well, I think, you know, Michael Vick said that the $10,000, he said if he can help in some small way, it's the least he can do. Rest your conscience, Michael, you did the least you could do. I think the symbolic thing with the Washington Nationals was very nice. I don't envy, quite frankly, the Virginia Tech football team next year or the Virginia Tech basketball team next year. They're going to be inundated with people wanting to know what they're doing, what they're, you know, are they helping the community heal? Are they performing their therapeutic function? And these are kids who are going to have to try to play a football schedule and a basketball schedule in a crazy kind of general atmosphere there. And I don't envy them their seasons.
On Tuesday, the Tampa Sports Authority asked a federal appeals court to reinstate pat-down searches at Tampa Bay Buccaneer football games. The searches became NFL policy after September 11th, but they have been challenged in Tampa, Chicago, Seattle, and San Francisco. The U.S. Justice Department argued that, quote, there is no constitutional right to watch a football game live. So, Charlie, as our resident constitutional law scholar, would you agree?
Well, given the current Department of Justice, which is somewhere between a Wednesday night bowling league in Waukesha, Wisconsin, and the Marx Brothers, I have no doubt that they feel that way, that it's okay to have Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights as long as you sort of keep them in your living room on the mantelpiece and don't take them out in public. I applaud the judge that overturned this policy in Florida. I'm not sanguine about whether or not his decision will stand, however.
The new Women's Soccer League, which has taken up the name of the once-defunct WUSA, has announced that the Boston Breakers will be among the 8 teams to begin play in 2008. And since Bill's not here, we can be honest about this. I wonder what chances the league has to make it work this time.
Let's see. I mean, it's a tiny niche sport. Let's hope they're satisfied. I like the beat, the courage, the charge, the cyber rays, the breakers, the power, the spirit, and the freedom, because this is now the abstract concept league. I hope it survives. There's a Women's World Cup coming up. That generally pumps up the interest in it for a while. You know, there's always going to be somebody who wants to try this, and good for them.
And finally, Charlie, for the second time since 2003, Boston Marathon organizers played the wrong national anthem for a Russian champion. Lydia Grigorieva says she was too busy accepting her olive wreath and trophy on Monday to notice the mistake, but I'm sure you caught on right away.
I did not, because I wasn't watching the award ceremony. But yeah, the anthem that Russia has now is the same melody as the old Soviet Union anthem. It has different lyrics, probably involving McDonald's and blue jeans. You have to remember, the Boston Marathon on the women's side has come a long way in the 30 years since the day they couldn't tell you who won the race. So I think confusing the national anthems is a sign of real progress.
Well, what do you think? In honor of Ms. Grigorieva, do you think we can hum a few bars? Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Globe. Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Sunday Globe and is always good for a chorus or two when he joins us each week at this time on Only a Game. Thanks, Charlie. Thanks for listening to Only a Game. Please check your local listings for the NPR station nearest you to carry our show. And please visit our website, onlyagame.org.